This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by Light Up Media Group. Now, your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome, everyone, from around the world to the Inside Pitch. I'm your host, Peter Caliendo. You know, as you know, we do not like to waste any time. We'd like to get started with our very first guest because we want to bring all the substance of the talk to you right away. So I'd like to welcome to our show, J.R. Richardson, the associate head baseball coach at Tiffin University, an NCAA Division II school in the Great Lakes region, Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. J.R. has coached at many levels, starting from even St. Charles North High School in Illinois, where I began, to travel clubs, junior college, and now at Tiffin University. Along with that, I've had a great pleasure working with J.R. with the USA Baseball Great Lakes National Team Identification Series. He was one of our regional coaches, and we traveled together internationally and competed. So I've got to know J.R. really well, not only as a coach, but also as an instructor and an individual person, just an outstanding individual with a great deal of knowledge and the exact type of person that we like as a guest on our show, an innovative thinker, a person who thinks outside the box. So we're thrilled to have J.R. And by the way, we are doing the show live from Taiwan, Kaohsiung, where I am currently here with the World Baseball Softball Confederation, where we are hosting the Premier 12 event, professional baseball event, where 12 of the top teams have qualified from around the world. And we've got some great teams here. So we're thrilled to bring the show from you. So we're going to get started, and we're going to welcome J.R. Richardson. J.R., how are you?
Doing well, Pete. First off, I want to thank you for having me on. I think what you do and how you do it is phenomenal for the baseball community. It's all about sharing your knowledge for the game and, you know, sharing our passion, and hopefully somebody can take something away and use it to help some kids enjoy the game a little bit more.
You know, we're thrilled to have you, and, you know, I know we've been bouncing back for the audience, for our guests, and, you know, we've been bouncing back and forth because I'm in Taiwan and JR's in Ohio, and, you know, we're trying to figure out the time zones and our schedules. And I know JR is busy because not only the recruitment aspect that's important in college baseball, but also, you know, constantly working with their players. You know, baseball is a 24-hour job, and I know sometimes it can be tough on the family. And I got to say that you must have an outstanding wife, because I know you're busy a lot.
Well, yes, very understanding. But, you know, she loves me, I love her, and she supports everything I'm trying to do. She knows that this game is a part of who I am, and yeah, and we make it work. It's definitely not easy, especially with two little girls running around, but we make it work.
Yeah, I understand that, and that's important. The family life is important. Without family, there's no way we'd be able to accomplish the things in baseball. So let's do this. Let's jump into our topic, another unique topic. I think the audience is going to love it. Our listeners, player development through focused intent. And when I was talking to JR, you know, I said, well, player development through focused intent. You know, it is tough to stay focused, not just through a game, a whole game, but even, you know, how do you train to stay focused in all aspects of the game? Now, we're going to talk about a couple aspects. We're going to start with hitting, and then we're going to go into pitching also. But let's begin with the topic. And JR, I want you to explain to our, you know, audience and our guests that are listening from all over the world, the title itself, why that title, and what a little bit about what the title kind of means.
Yeah, no problem. Ultimately, you know, to give you a little bit of background of where this comes from, I'm kind of a nerd for the game. You know, I love to break everything down to its simplest form. And focused intent, really what I mean by that is that I want to coach the game in regards to how we are going to win the game. So I guess focused intent could be goal orientated to a certain degree, but what that means is we want to develop players through teaching them how to understand how you win a baseball game. Because ultimately, I think we've kind of created a environment where young kids, as they're going through the development process at the youth levels, through their lessons and instruction, they don't really grasp the details or the finer details of the game. Something I learned from you when we were down in the Dominican, you never tell the baseball players how many outs. They have to tell you how many outs. Just to create an understanding of the game, they're a responsibility. So focused intent really means, how do we win the game of baseball? And it can be applied to, you know, hitting, pitching, you know, any aspect of the game, specifically base running as well. But what I'm getting at is, if we start with the goal in mind, if we start with the intent, we can develop the baseball player within the athlete. We can teach them the game. As a college coach, I see a lot of kids who don't understand how to win the game. You know, they're great ball players, great athletes, and, you know, unfortunately, for some reason, this component of the game's kind of been lost on them. You know, they don't understand where runs come from an offensive standpoint. They don't understand what a competitive at-bat means. They don't understand, you know, that strikeouts are bad. You know, and I blame part of it on kind of the ESPN top 10, you know, culture, so to speak, where, you know, we're giving all these awards to guys who are striking out, you know, 200 times a year. When you can go through and look at Rod Carew's numbers or George Brett's numbers, and I don't think either one of those guys ever struck out more than 100 times in a 162 game season.
That's a good point. So let's stay on that. Let me ask you this question, because I think it'll set the foundation for our people, our audience. A lot of the kids that you see that you're recruiting now, and I'm talking about even starting as young as 14 years old, and I know you've worked with kids younger than that. They don't seem to really, nowadays, like we used to, they don't seem to want to play the game on their own. They seem to be told what to do all the time. So I think, you know, where does this start? You know, if it starts at the young level, how do we begin to deal with that? Because by the time you get them, if this focused intent or playing the game on your own and understanding how to play the game isn't started at a young age, how long is it going to take you when they get to college to be able to teach them that?
That's a great question, and that's something I deal with immediately when kids get on campus here. Every fall, before we start our 45-day fall season, or actually the first day of our 45-day fall season, we sit down in the classroom, and we ultimately lay out what we're going to do, why we're going to do it, why it's important. We lay out what focused intent ultimately means. Now, just because they're introduced to it doesn't mean that, oh, I get it, I'm just going to go do it now because coach said so. A lot of freshmen and a lot of our transfers, you know, still kind of feel like, oh, I need the coach to watch my swing and let me know what's going on and, you know, let me know if this is good or that is good. And I constantly have to remind them that it's your swing. It's your career. I'm done playing. My job is to help get the most out of your athletic ability. And by me telling you what to do all the time, that's really not going to make you a better baseball player. What's going to make you a better baseball player is if I can help lead you there, but you figure it out. So a lot of our cage time, a lot of our practice time, you know, is trying to create drill work that ultimately helps these kids, one, learn the game and learn our system, but two, be their own coach. I don't want to have to coach 15 to 20 hitters every single year. If I can teach them to be their own coach, teach them to understand their swing and, you know, have some feel for the game and understand, you know, a given approach considering how the game kind of changes and evolves, that's my goal, is to teach baseball to baseball players.
And we're going to get in even to the hitting aspect, but Let's take it down to the younger groups just for a second here. The coaches that are dealing with the young kids, you know, the 8s, the 12s, the 14s, right? You know, before they get to high school, even the high school players, you know, what are some things? And I know it could be a, you know, 10-hour program, but what are some of the things that, even as volunteers or as travel team coaches or high school coaches that, you know, may not have as much time as you have as at the collegiate level, what are some of the things that they can begin to do? Just to give us an idea, some of the things they can do that can begin to progress this, so that way when they get to you, at least there's a foundation.
Oh, I'm with you. I mean, I guess first off, kind of explaining whatever it is you decide to do with your players, explaining why it's important. You know, as a hitting coach, we want the ball, you know, driven. We want to stay in the middle of the field. We want to swing and hit the ball gap to gap. But, you know, as a youth player, you're trying to get kids to work off the tee and hit the ball up the middle. But do they understand why the ball should go up the middle? Do they understand why it's important to be able to hit backside or swing the bat and be able to drive the ball the opposite field? Do they understand why it's important to be able to hit a ball on the ground with the runner on second, less than one out, right at the second baseman? I don't think they understand the importance of those things. So being able to explain, all right, we're working T, we're driving the ball up the middle, and this is why. For our guys, you know, I give a kind of a detailed report of every conference weekend offensive productivity report. Essentially, I track every ball that's hit to left field, center field, right field, and then I kind of look at how many runs we score. And what I've found is that we score roughly 20% more runs when we have the ball going to the middle of the field. I can get into the detailed statistics of it all, but I use some fancy, not baseball statistics, correlation coefficients to essentially be able to deduce where our offense is coming from.
And through that, what you're talking about, and that's important because even if we don't talk about how you get the statistics, you have the statistics, and that's the proof that shows when you hit the ball up the middle, you've seen more success.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, anything, and when I say up the middle, you know, people who are a little more interested in where offense comes from can take a look at a gentleman by the name of Charlie Lau, and he has gone to great lengths to kind of explain and ultimately defend his philosophies. But in short, if you are hitting the ball anywhere to the right side of the shortstop, all the way to the right foul line, that's where runs come from. And everything that I've tracked and charted kind of, you know, mimics exactly what he believes. So, you know, creating offense happens when we are good hitters. We want to turn swingers into good hitters. So, you know, from a youth standpoint, I don't have any college kids who have ever really played pepper. That's something I used to do as a kid all the time. I grew up with two younger brothers, and we only had, you know, a small bucket of baseballs, and there wasn't a catcher when we were playing ball in the yard. So if it was a bad pitch, we learned to just tap it back to the pitcher so we didn't have to chase it because we weren't playing with the backstop.
You know, and let's stop there just for a second, only because you brought up a good point. A lot of kids aren't playing pepper nowadays. A lot of kids and coaches who are younger coaches don't even know the word pepper, what it means. You know, and for our audience, you know, just to give you a little background, pepper is when, you know, you have one hitter, and we usually do it down the left field line, right field line, it could be, and you have two or three fielders in front of that hitter. Now, it depends on the age. It could be, you know, 20 feet, 40 feet, 50 feet. And that those players are throwing a ball at the hitter, and that hitter has to control the bat and control the ball and hit it back to those players on a one hop. This continues. You're getting fielding working. You're getting back control. And the reason I wanted to bring that up, JR, is because I want to ask you a question about this, and then I'm going to step back even further a little bit. And that's what's great about the podcast is that we're able to really communicate a lot of things. You know, I found, I want to get your opinion on this because, you know, we don't have all the answers. I found that even with younger players that, you know, pepper a lot of times was played where when you hit the ball, you have to follow through and go all the way around. And sometimes a young player starting like that doesn't know how to control the bat and really hits the ball real hard. And then sometimes they chop it down into the ground. So what we've done is we've played what we call, you know, contact pepper, where they stop at contact, where they're trying to hit either a one hopper or even actually a line drive back. But at contact pepper, you can't hit it real hard. Mm-hmm. So, and it also shows them at contact where they're at where if they just took a full swing all the way through trying to control the ball, they don't, if they miss it or they really chop it down, they don't know what they did wrong. Give me your opinion of that and tell me what you guys do at your level that might be different, you know, when it comes to pepper.
We've always called it pepper. The contact pepper you reference, it's funny because I started doing this with the first group of kids I coached in high school. And instead of playing flip or whatever the heck they were doing, I wanted them to get some work in. So ultimately, you know, I taught them how to play pepper and I sent them down the line. And that was the only thing they were allowed to do before games. And I noticed the same thing. They were hitting missiles at each other. And somebody was going to get, you know, smoked and it was going to be my fault. So I had them actually do the same thing you referenced. You know, I had them stop at the point of contact, you know, trying to teach them and develop some barrel awareness, you know, some awareness of their hands and what their body's doing and seeing the ball and trying to get it to go someplace.
And they actually struggled at the beginning. Some of our guys couldn't even hit the ball when they had to stop.
I couldn't agree with you more. We experienced the same thing. And honestly, there's some college guys who you ask them to go slow and they lose the feel for their swing, you know, because what's really happening is, you know, they've got this very detailed idea of what their swing is. And, you know, they're kind of on autopilot. They can only go full speed. So getting them to go slower is a good thing. You know, and it reminds me of a drill I heard of. You know, Hank Aaron used to do it. He called it the 8-second swing. And he would count 8 seconds, you know, 1-1,000, 2-1,000, so on. And he would go through his entire swing process within those 8 seconds just to try to build and develop a little bit of self-awareness in regards to what he's doing and how he's doing it.
So he was trying to slow his swing. He was slowing his swing down to feel it and understand it better?
I believe that was his intent. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but I came across the drill researching and reading something online or some magazine, and I just thought it was great because oftentimes as a coach, kids they'll never see themselves swing even if you videotape it. So,
well, and I got to believe, JR, if you slow your swing down really slow, 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 and you're working on it, even off a tee, now you're getting a better understanding for your swing, where then if you start to speed it up, now the body feels what it's like. A lot of kids just want to speed it up and have no idea.
Exactly. You know, I think it helps develop some awareness and some feel and kind of outlines, you know, kind of, it basically puts some stuff together in that head, you know.
All right, I'm going to throw you a curveball because I know you were a good curveball hitter. You got pepper. I'm going to ask you to say when you use pepper or with your players, but let's take batting practice, pepper, game. You know, nowadays, you know, a lot of people are saying, even a guy like Joe Madden, you know, sometimes batting practice can be overrated. It could be good, it could be bad, depending on how you use it. You know, your guys before a game, do they play pepper? Right before they get in? And what can it do for you? I guess my question is, what can it do for you when you're playing pepper prior to a game, for young kids also?
Well, I think it's just a good way to get the hands active. You know, I think when you're preparing for a game, you have to communicate to your body, like, what's the intent here? Like, before 10 years ago, we all used to do the static stretching where we'd, you know, do the toe touches, or we'd sit down and do the hurdler stretches. And we've learned from research and science that ultimately, that's telling our nervous system, we're going to sit down, relax, and do stuff slow today. We've gone to a dynamic type of stretch where there's movement and there's explosive movements. And because that's basically preparing our central nervous system to say, hey, we're going to do some explosive stuff today. And I think warming up with pepper is a good thing because it's telling our hands, hey, we got to have a little bit of intent here. It's very difficult as a hitting coach to coach hands. You know, I kind of hope that they're a non-teach for most people because really, you know, the hands, it's not that they have a mind of their own, so to speak, but we want them to have a mind of their own so they can go to the baseball. As a result, I think warming up with pepper is a good thing. Now, at the college level, we're lucky enough and blessed enough to have some pretty darn good athletes, and we work on creating a pregame routine for them. That's their routine. So whatever drills that they have, each guy is kind of an individual, and I work with them to kind of help create some drills for them. But as a result, I think we're better because we keep it individual.
Are the individual routines geared for that? So you're saying particular drills for that particular player, not one drill for everybody.
Exactly. I'm not a huge proponent of batting practice. You know, as you mentioned, Joe Maddon's not really a big fan of it. Never will we face a pitcher throwing 45 feet in a game. Never will we see a consistent release and consistent delivery and consistent velocity. So I believe BP actually at times makes hitters worse because, you know, you're allowed to do things you can't get away with in a game.
Is there anything in batting practice that you do?
Yes,
you know, that prepares them for the game, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we run our batting practice completely different than most teams that we've played. Each group gets a certain time allotment, and ultimately you get – each round is four pitches, and within that round you have to either hit a line drive or hit the ball in the middle of the field. If you do not do either one of those things, you are done swinging. We are trying to train hitters to have an on-demand swing and response. And if you can't square baseballs up in BP, we've got some issues. As a result, you know, we want to train guys to be able to see that pitch and hit it hard the first time. We don't want it to take 10 swings to get loose and ready to go, because that doesn't happen in a game. So it's a little interesting because some guys get one swing, you know, and then they're out, and then they're out again. But ultimately, over time, guys kind of learn to control what it is that they're doing.
And you know, it's interesting. On this show, we love to hear, you know, we call it outside the box thinking. You know, we're not trying to reinvent the game, but we're trying to come up with ideas that are going to make the players, the game, you know, the team better. And what you just brought up, I know you listened to it because Nelson Gord was on our very first show from Notre Dame High School. You know, and he brought up the concept of, you know, his pitchers, you know, they pitch one or two innings, but if they get an extra inning if they have nine pitches or less in that inning.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to what you're saying here. You know, if you can hit the ball up the middle, then you're going to get hitting. If you're not, then you got to work on something to get back in here to get that.
Exactly. And it's, I guess my whole, I go back to my entire career, and even as a player, like BP was kind of like a laser show. You know, it was like, all right, let's drop and drive, cast and blast. Let's show the other team whose muscles are bigger. But ultimately, that doesn't lead to winning the baseball game. You know, we are about consistent, solid line drive contact. And ultimately, we want to stay in the middle of the field. I think that gives us the best margin for error. And I think communicating the way that we have with our warm-up routine says, hey, this is the goal, and this is what we are going to do. And if you're
the reason I apologize for interrupting, but I want to relate this a little bit to younger players too, because there might be some coaches. You know, our shows have three levels: level one, level two, level three. And as our audience can look at on the website, but we encourage them to listen to all the shows if possible, because they can always pick something up. When you take a young player, you know, I have a coach who's throwing underhand, you know, for BP, because a lot of young players, you don't want to throw overhand. Yeah. Or maybe a coach is on one knee throwing overhand. You want to, and you can do the same thing. I mean, you can encourage young players and have an incentive for them, even at the young levels, to do this. There should be no difference, right? Just because you have a screen or you have more equipment doesn't mean that a young coach that doesn't have that can't accomplish this one way or another.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's you know, it's a byproduct of, you know, if I'm a 12-year-old coach or a 12U coach, it's real simple. Round one, you know, we're driving the ball up the middle, and you pick something out on the field, out on the outfield fence. It's got to stay in between here. You know, you want to feed the ball up, right down the middle of the plate for the guys to be able to drive it back up there. But, you know, you do it well, you stay in. you know, next round, it's driving it to the other way, you know, and make sure as the coach, you're feeding it to the outer half so they can have success doing that. But as a result, when we focus on the intent to drive the ball up the middle or go the other way or even pull it, you know, the player is going to be better. They're going to start to figure out what they have to do. And yeah, at first, if you're going the other way, you're going to start to see guys adjust their swing and try to push it over there. But, you know, that's when, you know, the coaching comes into play and you teach them where within their swing, where within their zone is the ideal point of contact to drive the ball out over that way.
But now I've seen that. Let me ask you this. I've seen the Japanese and the Japanese national teams. They will, and I really believe in this, they will a lot of times during batting practice, they have pitchers throw batting practice, mm-hmm. But they also have them throw certain pitches, you know, because they want to create more of that game experience where, you know, you're working on a curveball, you're working on, you know, change-ups, you're working on fastballs, to where if you're just throwing batting practice, you feel great, but like you said, they're throwing 40 miles an hour. Now, if you're throwing 40 miles an hour and the guy's not hitting well, well, now mentally, he's not going to feel real good about it. What do you? Is there something you do to prepare you guys? Of course, up the middle, but anything else that you have them prepared for?
Yeah, we do have, and again, I don't see a lot of this, and it's not per round, and our approach from a coaching standpoint changes depending on who we're preparing for that week. But if we're playing a team that we know is going to be very fastball heavy, we will mix in within those rounds breaking pitches that they don't know about that they're coming. And, you know, the goal is if you see it up, you drive it. If you see it spinning and it's down, you spit on it and you take it. So we're trying to train them within that instance that we're going to attack the fastball today. There's some teams who try to ultimately pitch us a little bit backwards, and you know, we approach that differently as well. And now it doesn't just start in the pregame for, you know, the first BP session before our first game of the conference weekend. We're planning for that all weekend with how we train. If we know we're playing Grand Valley State, for example, who always has guys who are, you know, throwing low 90s to mid 90s, you know, we're going to ramp up our machines and get them going as fast as we can. And we're going to essentially try to recreate that pitcher through our focused drill work. So that way our players can have that same intent within their drill work that they will need to have in the game to be successful. Now, I understand at the youth levels, you know, the type of scouting and stuff and scouting reports that doesn't really exist as it does at the on the college level. But more often than not at the high school level, everybody knows kind of who they're facing, and you got to prepare for the game that you need to win today or that day. And or the next day, whatever the next game is.
Yeah, and at the younger levels, you hear, you know, even at the high school level, and because they don't see enough of the same pitchers, you know, you hear that a lot of times they struggle with off speed stuff, and that's when, you know, when that lefty throws, you know, who's got the changeup and the curveball, they struggle with it. But I think, like, you know, through what you're talking about, focused intent, we really don't work a lot on breaking balls at the younger levels. You know, we're always working on fastballs, and all of a sudden the kid sees a curveball. He's never seen one before, and then you wonder why he can't hit it or a changeup. So what is it? That's what you're talking about. In your drill work, you prepare them for that.
Oh, most definitely. You know, not to get into the details of our, you know, hitting philosophy and whatnot, but we teach guys, you know, how to be able to hit off-speed pitches. We're real big on sitting on pitches. As a hitting coach, I think you can sit fastball and kind of, you know, down gear, downshift into hitting a breaking ball effectively. I think it's very difficult to hit a breaking, you know, be sitting on a breaking ball and kind of upshift it up to hit a fastball. I think the swing gets real jerky. So ultimately at our level and what we've had success with is, you know, we're sitting pitches, but we teach our guys and prepare our guys how to do this. You know, hitting is about the ability to adjust to the evolving game state. That includes what the pitcher's doing, what the defenses are doing. And we have to be able to take those things into consideration, build an approach, and be able to execute that approach to have consistent success. We're not going to just continue to repeat the same mistakes, hoping for a different result. There's one thing I stress at the beginning of every fall when I go through that little meeting with all of our hitters. Not one of them is ever allowed to say, this pitcher's too slow, I can't hit him. because that just it doesn't play. I mean, ultimately, a pitcher's job is to disrupt your timing, and everybody in our conference is going to have a softer lefty or even a soft righty to try to throw us off. But
we do tend to blame, you know, sometimes to blame somebody else for our inability to be able to do something. And then I've done that where I said, the pitcher's too slow. Can you speed it up? You know?
Yeah.
Well, and they'll say that in batting practice too. You know, the coach, can you speed the ball up? Well, why would I want to speed the ball up when you have to? And I want to get on this because the hitter has to be able to adjust and time the ball, right?
Exactly.
So when we were talking about Pepper, and I failed to mention this, I had it in my notes to ask you. See, I believe, and I want you to tell me what you think about this. I believe that when you're playing Pepper, you have to time the ball.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, hitting is all about timing. I mean, honestly, I have a little, I guess you could say, adjustment cycle that all of our guys go through. And the first question is, was I on time to hit that pitch? Because I can't give you an exact percentage, but I'm going to guess and say 70 to 85% of the time, we're not hitting well because we're not on time. Hitting is all about creating timing.
All right, stay on that because now, you know, and I believe that like you do, timing's so important. But yet, and that's why I say Pepper. If you start with Pepper, you know, kids throw balls at different speed. They don't control it as well. So now you have to really work your timing down. That's one aspect of how to work timing, but we tend not to spend a lot of time on that.
Well, I agree with that.
What are some of the things you do that, you know, maybe, you know, Pepper's one of them, but is there anything else that you do to really work with your players to help them with their understanding and doing the timing, as you mentioned, through the focused intent?
Yeah. Well, we do a lot of different stuff. In game, you know, last season, you know, saying something and trying to teach something to a kid once or twice is one thing, but coaching and holding them accountable is another. And I can remember specifically, you know, we were playing Ashland University, who had a phenomenal year. We were at their place, and our guys, they weren't doing a good job getting on time. Ashland was throwing a guy who threw pretty darn hard. As a result, you know, as the hitting coach, I'm not coaching the bases. I'm in the dugout with the guys. And when they were in the hole, I made every single one of them stand in front of me and show me how they're getting on time with each pitch that this guy threw. They had to essentially try to watch his body, try to watch his arm, try to watch the pitch, and they had to be able to create good timing, you know, during the game right in front of me, because I realized it wasn't happening. You know, and while Ashland's pitcher was phenomenal, you know, we were able to touch him up for, I want to say it was five runs in the first two innings, and we were the only club that year who knocked him out of a game early. You know,
now, if you're working at the collegiate level at that, and we're talking about also young kids also, where does that timing begin in a game?
Well,
where do you start working on it?
We start working on it as soon as we see the opponent's pitcher get up in the bullpen to start getting loose. All of our hitters will ultimately, they will be hawking the pitcher from the other bullpen, trying to pick up on a release point, trying to pick up on a delivery pattern, trying to pick up, you know, ultimately what his body's doing. Is he telegraphing his, you know, fastball versus his curveball, changeup, slider? What pitches does he have? Now, I'm real big on, we don't communicate, oh, it's a curveball, oh, it's a slider, because that could mean so many different things. We communicate shapes. What does it look like? You know, use your finger, use your hand, because that's what we see. A curveball could be 12-6. Somebody else's curveball could be, you know, more of a slurve, or they could call it a curveball and it's really a slider. We communicate shape, because when you communicate shape, you're able to create a different picture in your head and ultimately be a little bit more prepared. We've all seen the changeup, you know, that kind of runs away from the right-handed hitter. We've seen the changeup that just kind of drops a little bit. We've seen the changeup that doesn't do anything and it's just the guy's telegraphing it with a slow arm. Which one does that guy have? And based on the situation, you know, how often is he going to it? And what can we do to prepare for it? While that pitcher is in the pen, you know, what's he throwing for strikes? Are there any of his pitches that we can eliminate right away? You know, is he just bouncing that curveball in? If he is, we see spin, we're just taken. ultimately, it's about trying to use your environment to your advantage. When our guys are in the field, ultimately, our entire bench, our entire dugout, if their opponent's pitcher is going to start getting ready to come into a game, they're hawking him and they're communicating as soon as our guys get back in the dugout. So I think it's something that's kind of lost on our youth and stuff. But
let's take the high school guy then, because I've had a lot of high school players. They're on deck. Exactly what you mentioned. You're on deck and you're trying to time the guy. I'm not really sure they really understand what they're trying to do on deck. They're watching them and they're just taking a swing. Is there anything specific on deck, because we hear that's so important? And and if the older guys are doing it, then young kids can start realizing, man, this has got to be really important, because if collegiate level and pro guys are looking at it this way, then why aren't I doing it? So on deck, what is something that what should they be doing on deck?
Ultimately, you got to get your body prepared to react, because what we're doing, hitting, it's very violent. We got to turn quick and be able to hit something hard. But as they're getting on deck, they're worrying, they should be doing all of their preparatory mechanics, so to speak. And what I mean by that is everything that's important before you initiate the swing process. So our negative move or positive move, or what we call our load stride, whatever it is within whosever system, they should be paying attention to how their body's moving. And when that ball enters the hit zone, is their bat going to be there? Now each pitch is a little different. The outside pitch, the outside pitch needs to be contacted technically a little bit deeper, inside pitch technically a little bit further out in front. I don't want to get into all the, the details of the mechanics of the hitting zone, but in short, they should be focusing on staying on time with that middle fastball. And the reason
how do they know on time? Is there a part of their body that has to, like their foot, does that have to land at a certain time on deck with the pitcher, and how do they know how to do that?
That's a great question. And that's where it comes with, the repetition in doing it. It's hard because you don't have the same angle and stuff, but I think just because it's hard doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. It means that we should learn to kind of create that feel and do that dance with the pitcher while we're on deck, even in the hole. I keep going back to something I saw on ESPN a long time ago. And Evan Longoria, who is a phenomenal baseball player. I can't remember the year, but he was injured and he was sitting out. And every time that his spot came up in the batting order, even though he wasn't playing, he went through his same routine. He put his batting gloves on and he had his helmet on. And, he was doing the dance with the pitcher in the dugout, even though he wasn't playing in the game. He was taking the mental repetitions to try to create good timing. And I think that's, if a guy like Evan Longoria is doing it, he's got millions of dollars on the line. Let's face it, if he doesn't produce, he's not making $1 million next year. So as a result, he's preparing himself to make $1 million. I don't understand why our youth guys aren't doing it, why our high school guys aren't doing it. If Evan Longoria is doing it, we should probably do it.
Right at the beginning of the show, you mentioned, you've got to teach your players this, the focused intent. You've got to show them, teach them, explain it, all that. And then ultimately, you also have to have a system, what you might call drills, to be able to do what you're trying to explain to them. Because explaining is one thing, but actually accomplishing is another. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
I couldn't agree with you more. A lot of our drill work with our hitters is individual in nature, because we're afforded the time and I guess you could say the luxury to work with guys one-on-one. We're real big proponents of it. Even during our fall process, one of the guys' practice days is utilized as, individual lessons. So everything's, kind of a little bit different. Some of the things that we've had success with is, we'll put a tee out in the practice football field out behind our field, and we will, move the tee around the entire field, and the goal is to hit line drives to the field goal post. Kids love it because I'm telling them, hey, go nuts, hit the ball through the field goal post. But it's a great drill because we're getting guys to understand direction and their center of gravity and how all of those things affect where the ball goes. And just doing that simple drill, the intent is, all right, we're going to drive this ball. Let's say the field goal post would be kind of in right center field, you know, for the sake of explaining this. We're going to work on driving balls off the tee to right center field on a line drive. So just setting the goal like that, the guys can then manipulate where the tee is within their stance and understand, you know, ultimately, all right, how does where the ball is in my hitting zone affect the ball flight? And it's basically looking at it as cause and effect. And if they're paying attention to the process, they're going to start to establish some feel for what it is that they're doing. I'm real huge on what I call directional tees. And the field goal example is just one thing. You don't have to have a football field. You know, I've got ropes taped to our bat or tied up to our batting cages, and the zones are labeled. So, you know, maybe the closest to us is one, and then for deeper down the cages, two, et cetera.
So any kind of target would work for any level.
Yeah. And I got this idea from something I saw a video of Cal Ripken Jr. hitting, and he had a cage in his house. And I remember hearing him say to the reporter, all right, this ball is right here on this tee, and if I get my swing on it, see that piece of tape over there on the wall? It should go right there. And son of a gun, guy hit the piece of tape. Now, are all of our players able to do that? No. But that just kind of preaches an awareness of his hitting zone, his stroke, his swing, and the results he's looking for. And I think
I remember in college, you know, we used to set up a batting tee with a ball and then I'd take another ball and put it out, you know,
yeah.
maybe 30, 40, 50 feet away and try to hit that ball off the other one. And
yep.
The collegiate guys, we couldn't get them to stop because it was competitive and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they were working on a particular drill that allowed them to focus on what they're trying to do.
Yeah. So when you create the intent through the drill work, essentially it's not that you're tricking the guys, but you're allowing them to figure it out kind of on their own. You're leading them there. And I think in this day and age, when each player has played with a different coach every single year of their playing career, they've heard different coaching cues and terms. And while they may not understand them all, they have trust issues, man. You know, they've been told, keep your back elbow up by this coach and keep it down by this coach and get your foot down early and, you know, all this other stuff. They have trust issues. So if you can create intent through focused drill work, you know, that's going to help you win the baseball game. I mean, that's a good thing because they're going to start to figure it out.
And that's not just in the hitting aspect. I mean, that could be in all of the game. When we take the offensive game, a lot of times we don't allow our kids to play offensively on their own, you know, whether it's run the bases, let's take that, or anything else. So you can take the same type of philosophy and take it on the offensive part, correct?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, like we have a saying for our fall season, you know, there is no bad out on the bases, so to speak. We're trying to teach guys what they can get away with. You know, our base running philosophy is real simple. We want guys to score as fast as they possibly can. And ultimately, if they're taking, you know, read in the dirt and they're wrong, you know, and they get thrown out at second base, big deal. They just learned something there. If they're trying to get out to a, you know, whatever their lead is, if they're a 12, 13 foot base stealing lead, you know, maybe they're trying to stretch it to 14. If they get picked off, it's great. Stay at first base. You can't get that far against this kid. What happened?
Well, and you're allowing them. And you're allowing them to fail early on, so that way they're more successful during the season.
I couldn't exactly right. I think a coach's job, at least at our level, is to coach the fear out of a player, because ultimately we want the athletes to make the decisions on the field, and we're going to get better decisions when we teach them how to make decisions. When if a kid never gets picked off, he's never going to learn how far he can get, and that extra foot, that could be the run ultimately that's going to get you into whatever championship you're playing for. We want kids to learn.
If we can get young kids, well, think about it. If we can get young kids, young coaches to understand this, to work with young kids on this, by the time they get to your level, you can now at least be prepared to go on to the next thing.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, now we do see you know, some base runners who have a good feel for what it is that they're doing. And, you know, chances are they're coming from, you know, pretty good programs where their coaches have coached them up and whatnot. But it's few and far between. You know, it's tough because they come in and they understand the nuts and bolts of the game. They understand catch, throw, hit. They understand field. But the details, the base running, you know, why is it so important to go first and third on a ground ball that's through the right side of the infield? That component of the game is lost on them. They don't understand why it's so important to get a runner from second to third base when you have, if you're up to the plate and there's nobody out, you got a runner on second, get him to third with you know, one out ultimately, his chances of scoring are 80%. You keep him at second base with one out, his chances of scoring are like 40%. We want to win the baseball game, and to win the baseball game, you need to score more runs than your opponent. It's not about the hits or the home runs. Those all play a role in creating offense, but understanding how to leverage your outs to create offense is vital to a team's success. And I guess what I'm getting at is kids understanding that their goals and aspirations, whatever they want out of this game, should be achieved through a team concept. That's kind of lost on kids these days. And I get, you know, the free agency, a travel ball and going to different travel teams and all that stuff. But I really feel that we've lost the community of team, of everybody working together to achieve, you know, common goal, because kids don't want to give up an at bat to ground out to the second baseman to move the runner. We're not very good at hitting and running because we don't play pepper. We don't have good, you know, barrel awareness. We want to teach kids to understand and love the game. And while baseball is ridiculously complex, it's a phenomenally amazing game. That requires.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, you know, it's a fun game if you allow them to play the game, you know, instead of always telling them what to do. You know, you and I have talked about this in the base running aspect, and the reason we're going to base running too, we're talking about offense, we're talking about how to teach kids to be focused, you know, so they can accomplish certain goals. You know, you take base running, you know, how many coaches, and I've had discussions with major league managers about this. And I saw the, you know, in the college world, in the World Series with Kansas City, their manager allows them to run the bases on their own. You know, the ball's in front of you. Why am I making a decision for you if I should go on to the next base? Why, yes. You know, I'm here in Taiwan and I'm watching, I've seen the Cuban national team for 15 years now, probably one of the most aggressive and fun teams to watch run the bases. They know what they're doing because they're allowed to do that on their own since they were 10 years old. They didn't wait till they got to the national team and say, okay, guys, you're ready. You can do whatever you want on the bases. You know, the ball's in front of you. You control the game. They're doing it at 10 to where when they get older, it becomes a lot more fun for them. And I just think that, you know, having fun is important. And like you said, when a guy gets picked off, that's part of the game. You know, you learn from that, and then you go on exactly. And you become better at it. So, I mean, give me your concept on that.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, as I mentioned before, I think a coach's job is to try to remove the fear of failure from a player. You know, whether it's on the base paths in the outfield, you know, on defense, it's to remove the fear of failure, because then we get, you know, the correct intent. You know, if we're working a lead and we're hesitant and stuff, and you know, we don't know what we can get to. So
now, are you working in practice in this? Are you working in practice games, practices?
Both,
specific areas that, you know, drills that you're doing to accomplish this?
Little mixture of all of those things. Within our inner squads during our fall season, we are constantly working on this. So much so, we've even had last year, I had a very fast freshman. And, you know, he came in as a middle infielder and, you know, he had a good glove and he could play that position, but he had some wheels. And ultimately, he's going to be a phenomenal center fielder for us. But we recognized early his speed, and we actually had him, you know, working out with the varsity team as just a runner. And every inning, he started out base running at first base. We told him, you know, basically, Learn what you can get away with. Be as aggressive as you possibly can and learn what you can get away with. If he got thrown out, he went back to the preceding base. Now, we had to communicate this with our pitching coach because ultimately, you know, does our pitching coach want his pitchers thrown from the stretch all the time and, you know, all the details involved. But it was a good fit for him.
I still remember because I learned this from you and I still use it. You had a great drill, which I thought taught aggressiveness. Where, you know, when you put runners on first and a ball was hit, they had to go to third.
Yes.
No matter what. Explain that, because I think coaches are missing the boat here if they're not working on this drill with their players, because it does two things, offensively and defensively. Can you explain that?
No doubt. Whenever we do our cuts relay sessions, ultimately if we start with a runner at second or a runner at first, it's irrelevant. We want that base runner, you know, to get a read off the bat. But before he gets that read, he's got to know where his outfielders are. But all that being said, read off the bat, he's going first to third on the crack of the bat. It does two things. One, they realize that they can be a little more aggressive. Two, it's putting pressure on our defense to make a play and get the out. Because oftentimes in practice, we're kind of going through the motions and it's not game-like. So the goal is, or the intent is, to make it game-like. The intent for the defense is to get the out, to limit the bleeding, to kill the big inning, to know where to go with the ball. The intent for the base runner is how fast can we score? You know, what's our angles? Are we hitting the inside part of the bases? Do we understand where those outfielders were? Do we understand where the ball went? And ultimately, were we safe or were we out? Did we succeed or did we fail? Can we learn from that, you know, and then make ourselves a better baseball player? Because ultimately, we learned something.
Now you had a rule. You had a rule that any ball hit, even if it's right to the center fielder, one hopper, you had to go to third.
Correct.
And if you were thrown out, there was one reason. If you were thrown out, you would do something. Go ahead, explain that.
Yeah. If they were thrown out, they'd basically go back to the next base. But the way that it's kind of evolved over time is that the cuts and relays oftentimes. You know, you are running, you know, that's where you see a lot of your rundowns. We only practice rundowns, you know, baseball-wise at the youth levels for first and third type situations. But there are a lot of rundowns and opportunities to redirect the ball to get it out. So if they are in a situation where they're just, you know, dead nuts out, we have them work a rundown right off of that. So that way we're getting all of that communication. And the reason why I feel that's important is because if you're working a relay or a double cut, already your fielders are out of position and they may not know exactly where they are on the field. And that rundown creates even more havoc and an opportunity for your team to work on communicating effectively to get the out or limit the bleeding, so to speak.
And you're working on live situations here. So this is creating live situations in game, which is very hard to create in a practice. And your defense, what I'm getting at here is your defense is under pressure. So now they got to deal with the pressure with the runner, and your runners are going to understand that because you're putting pressure on them, as we saw in the Kansas City, World Series, even at the big league level, when you put pressure on players, they're going to make mistakes. So on the flip side, the defense is getting a chance to work on how to not make mistakes under pressure. On the other side, the base runner's, you know, doing his aggressive stuff. So he's starting to learn, man, I can take extra bases on these guys. Not
exactly.
Everybody plays catch great under pressure.
Exactly. And I think it's huge. Now, we'll do this off, just a straight coach's fungo initially, just so our new guys can get a feel for it. But ultimately, it evolves into a simulated BP scrimmage where we have the pitcher throwing so that way he's out on the field working his backup responsibilities on throws to the different bases. But it may be that we move the outfielders into the cut of the grass. So that way we're forcing balls over their heads. So now we got to work double cut situations. And, again, when an outfielder's chasing down a ball, his back's to the entire field. So we're working on communication as well. But I think any way you can create competition and build that game-like environment within a practice setting is a good thing for players. you know, it does, the first time you do it, it can get out of hand real quick because it ends up being a snowball fight and then an Easter egg hunt because you're trying to find the baseball afterwards. But once the kids grasp the concept, and it's a good thing. Now, we don't just jump into this. You know, we're breaking down our cuts and relays in the classroom up on a computer, you know, some sort of PowerPoint presentation, so they all understand their roles before we even take the field. But yeah, I think it's a vital part of practice, and I think it's why, you know, our teams come together to, you know, in the manner that they have, because we constantly try to create game-like situations in which they're forced to communicate to achieve whatever it is they're trying to do out there.
Okay, JR, listen, we can go on for 10 hours. We are down to our last 5 minutes of the show. Now, we discussed, you know, hitting offensive, the intent, or the focused intent of it. I know we can get a lot more in depth. We've got a lot of things we can get into. We want to get into the pitching also, so I'm going to bring you back to discuss the pitching part of that part. What I'd like to do right now, with the last few minutes we have, is there anything for our coaches out there and our parents and our players are all over the world that, according to, you know, on this topic, that you'd like to make sure that you get out there that we haven't had a chance to talk about? I'll give you that 2-3 minutes to do that, and then we'll finish the show up.
Yeah, most definitely. I think coaches ultimately shouldn't be concerned with winning a beauty pageant per se. I think oftentimes with all the lessons and stuff, and I'm not saying lessons are bad, but we're so consumed with how something looks and we don't pay as much attention to how something works per se. Nobody is going to critique a young man who's out in front on a breaking ball, throws the barrel, hits a double down the left field line and drives in an RBI. You know, nobody's going to say, oh, that was a horrible swing, because the guy achieved the goal, put the ball in play and score the run. So we shouldn't, as coaches, be so consumed with what something looks like per se. We should be consumed with the results or the utility of that thing. From a hitting standpoint, I don't really care if they hold the bat with their feet. If they're able to make consistent, hard line drive contact, we need that to win the baseball game. Line drives win baseball games. So I guess what I'm getting at is let's be a little bit pliable in our thinking. We've seen it with guys in the big leagues. Nobody looks the same. They all do a lot of the same things, but not many of them look the same in regards to how they're doing it per se. So let's be a little pliable. Let's start with the goal and work backwards from the goal to lead a kid to figure it out on his own. Let's not be so rigid in ultimately how we're trying to develop guys. You know, if you watch any of my hitters here at Tiffin, you know, they don't all look the same. You're not going to be able to say, oh, that guy hits with JR, that guy hits with JR. You know, my job as a coach is to understand what my players do well, develop that, you know, kind of help them with some of their weaknesses, but develop their strengths and ultimately figure out a way to leverage those strengths to create a competitive advantage over my opponent. Because I want to win some baseball games, and our guys want to win some baseball games. So as a result, focus on the utility and work backwards from that. You know, I constantly go back to something myself and my two younger brothers did when we were kids, is we were lucky enough to live pretty close to a nice little baseball complex in California. It was called Creekside Park out in Walnut, California. And they had a Pinto field and a Mustang field. And we would put the tee out there at home plate, and we'd start on the Pinto field, and we would try to drive the ball over the fence from the tee. You know, then when we got a little bit bigger, we moved to the Mustang field and tried to do the same thing. And we tried to hit it all over the field. It wasn't just sitting there dead red, cast and blast, drop and drive down the left field line. Ultimately, that intent, I think, kind of helped make us decent ball players. You know, my youngest brother, Nick, was drafted in the 36th round by the Arizona Diamondbacks, and he had a good collegiate career at Francis Marion University. I played 2 years at Elgin Community College and had a good career at the University of South Carolina upstate. Ultimately, I think us being allowed to figure it out, to want to hit the ball really hard, to not want to strike out, to despise striking out. I think those things kind of helped us, you know, play the game as long as we could. And we all had, sorry, go ahead.
What's amazing, and I know we're really short on time here now. What's amazing is we have not, you know, this show, for our audience and our coaches, this show is not scripted. You know, we're just talking baseball. And it's amazing what JR just mentioned, because I was going to mention to all our coaches out there, you know, take a day or two, go out to the field, tell the players to make their own lineup, get their pitchers ready. You sit in the stands, let them play for 9 innings. You take notes and let them just have some fun. You know, there's a lot they can learn by just playing on their own, and they don't do that enough anymore. And that was what you and your brother were doing. You guys were in the backyard with the tee, you know, and you were playing. And you learned from that experience. And when you're talking about player development through focused intent, what a better way to stay focused or to learn how to stay focused when you're on your own with other guys and there's no coaching going on, because you've got to accomplish certain things. And we used to, and I know we used to do that. I'm sure you did it when you were younger.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And we would develop, you know, silly little games. You know, we had something we called over the line, where you could play with four guys. You had a pitcher, a hitter, and if you hit a ball over this fake little line, it was a single. If you hit it over the next one, it was a double. And ultimately, it allowed us to play, you know, in a small little space. Like, I can vividly remember the area in which we played it. It was behind the Mustang field when there were other games going on. And if you dragged the barrel and spooned a ball to the right side, it was in play and the game had to stop. So we learned to stay in the middle because of that simple little over-the-line game. And you know, you constantly, as a coach, go back to your experiences as a player and try to figure out where you came up with some of this stuff. And, you know, it's I think it was really just a byproduct of my upbringing and, you know, my parents supporting us fully and saying, here, you know, go do this stuff. And it was, JR, it was great.
That was outstanding. We definitely got to bring you back. We've had some great speakers, great guests, the first three shows. And, you know, we definitely have to bring a lot of you back, because there's so much to the game that we can teach coaches out there. I want to thank you. It's an outstanding show you did. And I hope to be able to get you back on the show.
It's my pleasure, Pete. You know, I appreciate the opportunity. And if there's something I said that you can utilize ultimately from this, that's awesome. If there's something I said that you absolutely hate, that's kind of awesome too, because at least you formulated the opinion that you do not like it. Because some stuff works for my team, my program, my hitters, that may not work for yours. But you know, we have had some success offensively and on the pitching mound, and ultimately it's kind of about what works for your group of guys, and not being afraid to learn new things, try new things, and adjust.
Great. Thank you, JR. And for all you coaches out there, we're going to have JR's information on our website. I'll go over that. We'll go over some details on the website for you. And remember to check out our Twitter at Inside Pitch Show. Our Facebook is facebook.com/InsidePitchShow. And our website, where you're going to see JR's information, so you can also contact them and send them any questions you have. That is the InsidePitchPodcast.com. Now, you can email me if you'd like some information, if you'd like to hear a specific guest. The email is Peter@InsidePitchPodcast.com. Now remember, the more coaches get trained, the better players we're going to have all over the world, and it's going to grow the game much better. So, you know, continue to get educated. I'm your host, Peter Caliendo. Have a great day, and I will see you on our next show.
This has been the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo, a Lineup Media Group production. Get access to all of our podcasts, like Youth Baseball Talk, You're on the Clock NFL, and Let's Get It On with famed MMA referee Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock, online at lineupmediagroup.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.